Hello and welcome to Dragon's Demise, a podcast about what happens on, around, and behind the tabletop. On today's episode, I'm joined by Greg.
Hello.
And Leslie.
Hello.
And today is a very special podcast. This is our 100th episode.
Well, it's your 100th episode.
It is, yes. Yes, that is true.
I think it's number four for me.
But in terms of Dragon's Demise itself, like, this is the 100th episode of Dragon's Demise, minus the few lost episodes, but whatever.
Godspeed.
It is also coming out right after the 3-year anniversary of Dragon's Demise having started to exist pretty much as a podcast, which happened back on April 1st of 2015.
Wait, you started on April Fool's Day?
I was about to say the same thing.
I did not know this, actually.
We started on April Fool's Day, and actually part of the reason was that we could say, this is actually not a joke on April Fool's Day. We're actually starting a podcast.
All right. Well, know your history, kids, because I didn't know that. That's pretty great.
And so this week we're going to do something a bit different. We are going to give a list that we have not done in the course of the podcast yet. We're going to talk about our top 10 favorite games from the three of us. So we each approached it a little bit differently. I approached it from, like, you know, just which games I really, really enjoy playing, and like which are the ones, like, not necessarily that I will never turn down, because I was talking to Greg, I will turn down every game in some light. There's going to be a situation that I'm like, I don't want to play that.
Right.
But these are the games that I think are, like, exemplary examples of these types of games, and I just love them to pieces.
Yep. I started from a sort of similar perspective, except going even a little bit more extreme. So I started from a place of, what are the games that I will never say no to, ever? And, you know, that built out sort of a core list of 6 or 7 games, and then I fleshed that out with a couple of others that I was like, okay, well, I might say no to these sometimes, but the reasons for that are... why? You know, why am I doing that? And it's because they're long, or they're very particular, but they're still very, very good games and very sort of dear to my heart. So I definitely started small and worked up.
Yeah, I kind of did both. So my main thought when I was choosing games was, what are the games that I have enjoyed the experiences of the most when I've played them? And it's made for a really eclectic list that I think that some people will be a little bit surprised about some of the items on my list. Mm-hmm. And some of the games I haven't really even played a whole lot, but I enjoyed those experiences. And I, you know, and honestly, the ones I haven't played a lot, it's a length of time issue, because you don't always have 4 hours to play a game.
Yeah. Yep.
And there was actually a few games that I play a lot that didn't make my list because they're sort of filler games.
Sure.
And I enjoy them, but I don't get the amazing experience that I do out of some of these games. So.
Yep. And what we're going to do is, we have not shared our lists as of now. We don't know what anyone else's list contains.
We have suspicions.
We do. We have some suspicions.
We think
that there are some that definitely have certain games. But we're going to go through from 10 down to 1. Mm-hmm. And we're all going to say, like, our number 10, then our number 9, so on and so forth. So, yeah, here we go. Let's go ahead and let's start with Leslie for number 10.
We should twazi for it. No, we're not going to do that.
Should have done that beforehand.
That would have been smart.
Yeah.
All right, everyone pick a pawn.
Yeah.
So, again, like I said, my list, one of the big things I thought about was the experiences that I had with these games. And, you know, I was looking through our board game library on Board Game Geek of 170 games, trying to whittle it down to 10. And I came across this game and I thought, you know, it's not something that I would ever play in a small group. But if I had 6 people, Space Cadets Dice Duel actually is... on my list. We played it with my dad, and he had no idea what he was doing, and I can't even remember what role he was responsible for moving dice, and everything was moving so quickly, and everybody was yelling at each other but working together, and it was a lot of fun. And then we played it again, and it was really funny because we played it with me, my husband, and 2 other couples, and we somehow ended up boys versus girls, and the opposite partner all picked the opposite role from the other person. And it was just so much fun, and everyone gets really excited, and there's a lot of real-time excitement happening in that game. So it's ridiculous, and it's not something I would normally pick, but I think if I had six people and they were the right people, I would choose that game every time.
All right. Yeah, so my number 10, I went with Above and Below. Okay. I think it's an amazingly solid game. I definitely didn't come at this process knowing that, hey, I got to have a Red Raven game on my list. I mean, we talk about it all the time. But that is sort of how it worked out in my mind. I was like, I absolutely love this designer.
We weren't supposed to all have a Red Raven game on it.
That was actually, yeah, part of the prompt.
Yeah.
You know, but so I think thinking about a top 10 list, it just wouldn't have felt complete without a Red Raven game. And Above and Below for me takes the cake. I think it comes in at my number 10 slot because I think it's a very solidly designed game. I think it's got a little bit of a narrative element, just enough to keep you sort of interested in exploring some new things. And I think this is a perfect example of theme working with mechanics, where, you know, you're exploring, you're spelunking while you, the player, are exploring these new adventure cards and all those sorts of things. And I think they mirror each other very nicely. But when you compare it to, you know, something like Near and Far, or something like even, you know, other games in slightly different settings like Empires of the Void or City of Iron, I think it just works a little bit better as a standalone game. And I'm more likely to recommend that to a person who's never played these types of games before, a person who is looking to do a little bit of exploration with a little bit of, you know, sort of adventurer citizen management and some light resource collection. So Above and Below, number 10 slot.
All right, and then that leaves me. My number 10 slot is going to go to a game that we've talked about, and it's actually the first game that we reviewed on Dragon's Demise. So throwback there to Robinson Crusoe.
Okay.
So all right. This is the cooperative game for me that made me fall in love with cooperative games.
Sure.
Like, I really enjoy the exploration aspect, the risk-taking, the adventures that you go on, and the fact that this game has a very prominent storytelling aspect within it, in just, like, you know, what happened, and then, like, what's going to be the second half of this card? What are you going to find when it comes back up through the deck, through the events? And it has dropped recently. It probably would have been a little bit higher otherwise.
Before some of our recent experiences on the stream.
Yeah. So we've gotten brutalized by this game quite a bit. But at the same time, this was one of the games that inspired me to also do the Why I Like Losing Board Games on Dragon's Den. So I really don't usually mind losing as long as it's like a close game. And normally this game really does that for me.
Well, there you go. Number nines. Leslie, you want to start us off again?
Sure. So I knew when I was putting this list together that I had to have a good, crunchy Euro game. And this is one that I really have only played a few times, but Food Chain Magnate.
Never even heard of it.
It's a splatter game. It could last an hour. It could last 3 hours because of the mechanics. Basically, you're running a little food chain magnet.
Okay, yeah.
And everyone has a competing little food chain. You might be selling burgers. You might be selling pizzas. You might be selling lemonades. I highly recommend checking out the Shut Up and Sit Down review because it's hilarious.
We do enjoy hilarity.
It's pretty hilarious. To give you sort of a rundown of how the game works, since we're not going to go into that too much now. But essentially, it's a Euro game of marketing. And there's this little bit of area control because you're competing for who's going to come buy your burgers versus your neighbor's burgers. And there's a fun mechanic where you play until the bank goes bust twice, but the players determine how much money goes into the second bank, and it's a surprise. So if you put in a bunch of money, then the game could go much longer. But if somebody doesn't want a long game, you could put in a lower card, which is a really neat mechanic. Clearly, we're going to have to play this sometime.
Yeah, for sure. That sounds like a really intriguing sort of balance mechanic.
Almost similar to Evolution.
I was thinking exactly that, yeah.
I haven't played Evolution recently enough to make the comparison, but
just the watering hole aspect of people putting cards in for the watering hole amount.
Yeah.
For the bank.
Yeah. So it's awesome. It has little food-shaped meeples, which is a lot of fun. And, you know, there's the feminist part of me that is frustrated by the very, very 50s art because, you know, you get promoted and all the execs are men. But it's fine. It's 50s art and it's thematic. And also theme is, I'm going to mention a lot because theme is very, very important to me. And this game is extremely dedicated to its theme. And I think it plays out through the mechanics very well.
Yeah, we will definitely have to to play that. Possibly when you bring it over. My own number nine, I went with Star Realms. Star Realms, I own the physical copy of the game. I also own the digital version. And it is just a really, really solid game. I love deck builders. Dominion was really one of the first games that sort of introduced me to, let's call them grown-up board games, you know, things that weren't just Monopoly or Sorry or Clue. And so I'll always have a really soft spot in my heart for deck builders. And I think Star Realms does a really good job of having a very tight core. I think each of the four factions has a really strong theme going for it. It's very unique and it's very, okay, this is what I want to go for. I'm going to go after this. It's readily identifiable. It's easy to pick up. But there's also a lot of nuance to the strategy in ways that I personally don't get when I play a game like Ascension, which I think is probably the most similar deck builder, but it also brings more of the consistency of that game as compared to, say, like a Dominion or something where you build out the board randomly at the start. You know, if you play a long enough game of Star Realms, you're pretty much guaranteed to see some solid offerings from every single faction. So I think in terms of replayability and consistency, which is really important when you're looking at, you know, a quick two-player game that you can bang out in 10-15 minutes. I think this really shines, and that's why I put it in my top 10.
It was an honorable mention on my list. It was definitely close, a close call.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about it.
I mean, that's fair. That's why we're doing three of these, right? Actually, quick plug for the digital version. So you can play against other people, but they also have a really interesting campaign where you sort of go through different scenarios and it automatically sets up different things. So like, you know, you're facing a boss that performs this special type of action anytime it draws a blob card or, you know, all these sorts of things that you could technically do in a base deck, but they're just harder to simulate. And those are accessible completely for free.
Yeah.
So absolutely check out the Star Realms app. I think it's a great representation of, you know, how a digital board game can work.
So random aside, the first time I played Star Realms, we pulled out this brand new card game, right? My husband destroys me, annihilates me. I'm like, you beat me before I could even read the cards. And he was like, I've been playing the app. Brand new board game. You knew all the cards already. You knew how all of the mechanics worked. Awesome.
That's how they
get
you.
I downloaded the app and then beat him.
There you go.
Vindication. You I love go. It.
All right. And then last but not least, my number nine. That is, for me, Time Stories.
Okay.
And it's just one of my favorite like co-op kind of game experiences. It is a lot of fun to just go through all the different scenarios and I choose the different areas and like what dude are you going to be this time, what puzzle are you going to figure out. It has a really, really fun aspect there, and it's a game that I haven't played in a while, and it definitely has limited replayability, but at the same time I usually think it's worth it for the game itself. So
absolutely fantastic game, and also an honorable mention on my list.
Yay, two in a row. All right.
Yep. All right.
Number eight.
Greg, why don't you start?
All right, we'll change it up a little bit. Yep. This is going to sound like a deja vu because my number eight is Time Stories.
Oh, there we go.
Not an honorable mention, actually.
Oh, our first repeat.
It made the list. Yeah, first repeat on the list. I think everything Jacob said is absolutely true. Time Stories is such an amazing experience. There is no real replayability unless you have a terrible memory like I do. But the experience of Time Stories is, I think, very singular. I'm sure there are other games out there. You know, we played Exit, the Pharaoh's Tomb, which I think is similar in a lot of ways, but it's, I don't think I have ever played or heard of another board game that feels like playing a analog point and click adventure story. You know, the old like Curse of Monkey Isle, or, you know, those really old school point and click adventure games that everybody loved so much. I think Time Stories just captures that. And it does it with this really sort of compelling and admittedly expensive overarching plot that starts to emerge as you get, you know, the new scenarios and things.
And actually, the best analogy I've heard is you have to think of time stories as when you buy each new scenario, that's like buying a VHS tape, right?
Yep.
Or buying a DVD, I guess, because who buys VHSs anymore? So you buy the DVD and you play through it and it lasts however long it lasts and you have that experience. And yeah, you could rewatch the movie, right? Mm-hmm. You maybe rewatch the movie with different people and right. See if it goes differently.
Lend it to one of your friends.
But if you're going to spend $20 on a DVD, you're going to get much more enjoyment out of their $20 Time Stories purchase.
Yeah, absolutely.
We had friends that invited us out to an escape room and we were like, yeah, we got this Time Stories game back home we have to get back to. Sorry. I don't want to spend $60 on an hour when I've spent $20 on the expansion.
Yeah.
And I can do it on my own time at home, and B, it's so much more entertaining.
Yeah. So. And as Jacob says, it can last up to 5 hours depending on how bad you are at the game.
But. Speaking from personal experience.
Yeah.
My husband and I actually play it. This is one game that we play just the two of us. Mm-hmm. And we each play two characters. So we play all the way through, and it's quality time for us.
Sure.
So.
There we go.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Jacob, you're number eight.
My number eight is, now this is, I guess I'm treating a little bit. I'm going to say near and far here.
Okay.
How,
describe for me. Yeah,
cheating,
exactly.
Cheating because I have it tied here with Above and Below, but the reason is pretty much that Near and Far has a better storytelling for me. There's more story. Above and Below, one of the things that frustrates me about the game, I think the fundamentals of the game are probably better in Above and Below, but the storybook doesn't give any solutions to like what happens after the choice. Whereas in Near and Far, you have the little bit of like, you know, that one or two sentences that actually gives the story after you make a choice and either succeed or fail. And for me, that really tips Near and Far above and Below. And they're similar enough in terms of like the theme that I would like to put them together, but Near and Far does edge it out a little bit for me.
Do you think that there was a missed opportunity with the Empires of the Void and calling it Far and Beyond?
Ooh. I didn't even think about that.
Or even Above and Beyond. Yeah.
Far and Above.
Yeah. Yeah, any of these.
Clearly, yeah, somebody needs to write to Red Raven and just be like, hey, get good.
Yep.
I'm sure somebody else has already mentioned it, but...
No, I think that's true. But yeah, so Near and Far is my number eight pick.
Oh, number eight.
Respectable.
For me, it was the deck building game that made me like deck building games.
Mm-hmm.
I won't mention the one that made me hate them first. It's Thunderstone Advanced.
Oh, nice.
So we picked that up at the first Gen Con we went to together. And it was nice having already played a deck builder, so I knew the concept of how it worked, and I don't know, for some reason I really took to the theme.
Yeah.
And that was the first game I really got into strategy on how to strategize and make my deck work more efficiently, and ultimately my goal was to beat Hunter. Which I did, and I think I put it on my calendar the first time that happened because he played so many more games than me, like I just didn't have the background. But yeah, I really did enjoy that game. Unfortunately, I got to the point where we have so many of the expansions that sorting out the game got a little cumbersome.
Yeah.
And we do have the new version that was just released on Kickstarter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we've played through that one once. So I don't have enough experience with that game to say where it really falls. But it was fun. And I do miss playing Thunderstone Advance. We used to play it quite a bit. So
there we go. All right.
Moving right along into number seven. I'll start things off. We'll go around the circle here. My number seven is Codenames.
Oh.
Frequent listeners will know I am not the biggest social gamer. I'm not a big fan of social deduction. I'm not a big fan of party games like, you know, Cards Against Humanity or any of those sort of like silly games like that.
Yeah.
But I think Codenames is, there's something about it. And everyone we've played this with agrees. Codenames is just... the perfect combination of charades and, you know, something like some sort of spy versus spy, like figuring things out. And it is such a uniting experience. I don't think I've ever played with anyone who doesn't like Codenames.
I don't think so either.
And I've played Codenames with a lot of different people. I've played Codenames with my family. I've played Codenames with your family.
Yep.
You know, not to mention friends and things. So the fact that, you know, you sort of, you have this game that not only is a lot of fun and can be played with a relatively large number of people, but also sort of challenges your creative thinking in ways that board games typically don't. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of having to try to think about analogies and like ways to, okay, how am I going to get that fourth word into this clue? Like, really forcing you to think outside the box in ways that aren't just strategy, but are, mm-hmm. you know, do activate sort of different parts of the brain. I'm not a neurosurgeon. Please don't use me as any sort of like actual medical or sociological advice. But I think that's really a lot of fun. And I think that's why Codenames for me is probably the one more socially oriented game that I actually love. Not just enjoy or tolerate.
There we go. All right. My number 7 is completely different.
Okay. All right.
And it is a game that I've played. I think I've finally gotten to play it right after like playing it with some rules wrong and like not with the expansion and other things like that. And no, it is not Castles of Mad King Ludwig.
Okay. I'm sitting over here laughing because I feel like I know what this is. It's not Castles. All right.
It is Zaya, Legends of the Drift System.
Ah.
And this is a game that I love the theme. The theme of this game mm-hmm. is probably one of my favorites ever. Like, it is a game that has... You have your ship that you're building. You have like some trading, but you can also do some fighting. You can do some exploring. It's got like the whole 4X aspect and just a lot of really cool stuff in there. And I do think that you shouldn't play it really without the Embers expansion as of right now.
That does really help, yeah.
But either way, I think that the game is extremely solid and there's a lot going on there. And I just really, really enjoy the game.
I've never played it.
Well, we'll have to.
Yeah,
you'll give us a Food Chain Magnet, and we'll give you Zaya, and we'll report back.
I mean, perfect. Greg still hasn't played it correctly with the Embers yet.
No, I thought we did play correct game.
We
finally.
Played. I played. You weren't in that game.
That's right.
Yep.
All right. So my number 7 is mm-hmm. actually by the same company that makes Codenames.
And okay.
That is Alchemists.
Mm. Honorable mention for my list. Yeah.
I love this game. I wanted to spend the entire game figuring out all of the different potions and what they were going to make. And I love the fact that it's integrated with the app mm-hmm. and I have secret notes. I just felt like Hermione mixing potions together and taking all the, like the first game I played, I was actually able to figure out all of the combinations.
Dang.
I was just obsessive about it. And I think we don't have the expansion yet. It's on my list.
Mm-hmm.
At least I don't think we have the expansion. We have a lot of games at home. So I just love that game. And we don't play it much, but I think that it's a really good blend of note-taking and like office management and an amazing theme and really great and colorful art and really solid mechanics. And we actually had the opportunity when I was at Gen Con one of the times, we sat down with one of the creators. It was right before the expansion came out. So we had wanted to demo the expansion and we weren't able to do so, but he sat down with us and walked us through all the steps of what was coming out in Gollum. And it was really cool.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
Yeah. And the art is cartoony and like, but without being over the top.
Yeah.
It
treads a fine line.
Yeah. And it's not too silly, but I really, really can't say enough about how it integrates with the app on your phone.
It does a great job with that.
They did a bang up job.
To be able to figure out what those potions make and play that game. So number 7, Alchemists.
All right.
Jacob, you haven't had a chance to start off the round yet. Why don't you give us your number 6?
Alrighty. So my number 6 is Scythe. So
no surprises there.
I thought it might be higher.
Yeah. Good point.
Scythe is definitely one of my favorite games. I really love the theme, love the artwork, and I think you're probably sensing a theme about my games. It's theme first a lot of the times.
We seem to have that in common. It's okay.
Yeah. But the mechanics behind Scythe, actually, I am not a big fan of high conflict games for the most part. And Scythe is always the kind of game that everyone looks at and thinks it's going to be high conflict because there are mechs in it.
Right.
And when you actually play it, it is a very, very solid, resource management game that you could play without having a single battle.
Right, it's true. The mechs might as well be like agrarian,
yeah,
like farm implements.
Basically. Exactly. Like there's
cool
always
looking.
A.
They are.
They are really cool looking. There are some really cool mechanics in there. I can't wait to play with some of the other expansions, but even just the baseboard, I love the game. So number six, Scythe for me.
Awesome. Number six. My number six is Pandemic Legacy. Mm-hmm. So I can't say I'm completely in love with the theme, although it's pretty funny because every time we play it, I have to text message my best friend who's a virologist,
yep,
and say, I'm playing your game. And she knows that game, but her husband doesn't like board games, so she never used to play it.
Aww,
so
that's sad.
And she lives in Oregon, so
I don't... she can't play with you either.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Just unfortunate. But we are playing through Pandemic Legacy Season 2 right now. I'm sure I've mentioned this before on the podcast. We're playing it with the same people we played Season 1 with.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of history. We have discovered a lot of ways we work together as a team. It's another couple that we're playing with. Pandemic Legacy sort of solidified our friendship, so it's special to me in like sort of a non-game way.
Yeah.
But also because we played together with them now in Pandemic Legacy Season 2, we have like ancestors of the people that we played in the previous games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Three of us forced one other person to... We rioted and decided we were naming all of our characters after cities. I don't know if I told
yes,
you about
yes,
this.
I feel like I remember this.
Yeah, so we had Sydney, London, and Kinshasa Joe. And then Hunter goes and names his character Misha, and we're like, we're calling you Moscow. That's this, how this is going to work. And so now, you know, we have Cairo Joe, who is a relative of Kinshasa Joe.
Right.
And they have a lot of similar abilities, like moving people across the board kind of abilities.
Okay.
And,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Familial resemblance.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, again, there's a lack of replayability, although I think we could probably play it again with different people.
Yeah.
But I really, really want to, like, I want to frame the player boards with all the stickers on them and put them on the wall in our game room.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Probably be good for us, too.
We should.
Yeah.
See? Good ideas.
Yeah.
So it will always, whether I play it again with other people or not, it will always be one of my top favorite games. It's just, I love the story. I love opening another little box. It's very exciting. So.
As long as it's not the you failed four in a row, you suck box.
Yes.
Yeah, I've never had to open that box.
We narrowly avoided it in our season two game.
Yeah.
We lost three in a row, but
We're on September and we won our second game in September, but we lost our first one.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, didn't fail the month, though.
Yeah, no. There you go.
My number six is, I think, at least to me, this is my most surprising game on my list.
Okay.
And it made it higher than I would have anticipated, Inish.
Hmm.
I really want to play that.
I was thinking through things, and I was thinking about, okay, well, you know, what are the different types of games that I enjoy? What are the specific games that I enjoy? And sort of everything, I think, before Inish on the list, you know, 1 to 5,
yeah,
really coalesced very naturally. Mm-hmm. It kind of came together, and I was like, oh, absolutely. Yes, duh, no-brainer. All mm-hmm. these sorts of things. And I started thinking a little bit more outside the box, and I thought about Inish, and I thought, yeah, this is an amazing game.
Yeah.
You know, it's got territory control, but in a really sort of unique way that doesn't mm-hmm. revolve necessarily around, you know, a lot of direct conflict. And so sort of some of the, not subversion necessarily, but kind of approaching that mechanic in a very different way, the way that you draft sort of your tactics cards mm-hmm. and the action cards that you can play each turn gives you an additional element of strategic depth that can affect not just your combat and sort of your tactics, but also it can affect, you know, your ability to build or to explore or to pursue other strategies. And so I think from that perspective, it's a very well-balanced game.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I would be lying if I said that the art was not a factor. I think this game is absolutely stunning.
It is gorgeous. Yes.
You know, it's just got this amazing sort of like Celtic knotwork throughout, and the sculpts I think are pretty high quality, and mm-hmm. I think all of it really works together in a way that reinforces almost this very like ephemeral feeling about the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to give it a number six.
This was a honorable mention for me, for sure. It was in my top 15, just got edged out.
Well, there you go.
It's on my want-to-play list. So
that's another one. All right, yeah. Put it on the list. We can hook you up.
Yep. Alrighty. And now number five. So I'll start this one off again. And for me, number five is Mysterium.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So along the lines of code names in terms of the social deduction kind of game, for me, Mysterium is the one that I just absolutely love. As long as you're playing with the Polish rules, not the American rules.
No, it's true. They are way superior.
Yeah. So Mysterium for me, I love the concept of the game. I love being like the ghost and trying to like get people to choose whatever I'm thinking. And it's just so much fun to see how other people's like minds work in that game. Mm-hmm. Because like you'll give them something thinking that, oh yeah, they'll easily get this, and then they go in some completely different direction based on a detail that you forgot was in there, and like make some kind of connection. And like some people are really focused on colors, some people are really focused on shapes and other things like that. So there is a lot there. So that's my number five, Mysterium.
Definitely an honorable mention on my list, but it probably the same place as Space Cadets. And yeah, so
yeah,
for me, number five, Terraforming Mars.
All right.
Ooh, yeah,
there you go.
So it's funny because, you know, I looked at the box and I was kind of underwhelmed, and Mars not super up there for a theme that I would be interested in normally. And we went to Labyrinth just kind of on a limb and pulled it out because we'd heard good things. And within like three turns, I was like, no, we need to take this game home. Mm-hmm. What do you mean it's sold out?
It'll get you.
And that's kind of a rare occurrence where I'm just completely taken by a game that quickly. And we ended up not being able to finish playing because the store closed.
Yep.
And then,
that'll also happen.
And then waiting months for it to come. And, you know, and that's another one we don't get to play all the way through a lot because it's kind of a longer game.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
A little bit. But when we do, it's always a really good experience. So yeah, it's a really good experience. And I mean, the art could be better, but I love the mechanics. I love the building up of the engine. I love all mm-hmm. of the little moving parts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that yep. game. So
yeah, absolutely agree. My own number five is sort of a return to familiar territory, Brewcrafters.
Yep.
This, I believe the last time or at some point in the past when I put together a list of top 10, Brewcrafters was actually my number one.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I gave it a top shelf
yes.
rating. I stand by that. I think of all of the Euro games that I have ever played, and I've played more now since playing Brewcrafters, it is still my favorite. I think it is one of the best just in terms of sort of how the options are balanced. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of times in many of the Euro games that I've played since, a lot of the options seem fairly disparate. You know, you can do this strategy or you can do this strategy. And, you know, A and B are night and day mm-hmm. to one another. But I think in Brewcrafters, there are absolutely clear paths to victory. You know, there's path A and B and C and what have you. But they each sort of they share a core, and they share certainly a theme, but also a lot of common structures in the things that they do. And I think to have a versatility of experience while still maintaining really solid core gameplay is just a notch in its belt. And I would be happy to introduce it to anyone who was willing to tackle the complexities. So Brewcrafters, my number five game.
And also, another throwback to the history of Dragon's Demise, this was the first game and the first podcast that Greg was on officially as a co-host.
That's true. Little baby Greg.
Yep.
2 whole years ago?
Yeah, just about.
Yeah.
So, all right, with that, let's move on to number four. And Leslie, why don't you start us off on this one?
Sure. So my number four is Firefly, the board game.
Oh, wow. All
right. Again, I love thematic games. I think that the mechanics of traveling across the universe and moving pieces and carrying passengers really brings the TV show to life. This mm-hmm. is one mm-hmm. of my favorite shows. You know, I might have a Kaylee costume.
but wait, which costume?
I have a jumpsuit with the shirt. The pink shirt.
Nice.
And I found a place online to order the fabric that the shirt that matches the shirt she wears in the show in the first episode.
Wow.
And then I made my own shirt out of that fabric.
That's dedication.
That is impressive.
Well, In hunting, yes, but in cosplay creation, not so much. Making a shirt by the comparison of making all of the crazy armor and stuff that people do, I don't have the patience for that.
Yeah.
I can make myself a long sleeve t-shirt. And I can, somebody else went through the pain of matching up the fabric of for the shirt that she wears. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I've actually made that shirt a second time for a friend of mine for her Kaylee cosplay. So I really love Firefly. I really love this game. I love what they've done with the expansions. I have all of them. I have the giant box that Broken Token makes.
Nice.
The Mighty Fine Big Damn Crate, which is the limited edition pre-stained, like, felted insides, and it organizes the game really well, which is nice because setting that game up is a little tedious the extra pieces.
Yeah,
I love that game. And unfortunately, my husband likes to tell people that I win it every time I play, so then nobody wants to play with me. But that's not true. I don't always win. But
just 90% of the time.
But the first time we played it, I got the game for my birthday. We played it the next day, and somehow I finished all of my jobs very quickly and won, but we weren't done playing, so we played it again and I won the game a second time.
I've never actually played Firefly, and I have no idea how this could possibly even happen.
Well, you're supposed to get to a certain amount of money to win, but you can actually play the game with multiple different scenarios. Oh. There's like a whole stack of different scenarios. So we were playing on the starter scenario. If I remember correctly, you're supposed to complete a certain amount of missions and then get to a certain place with X amount of money.
Okay.
And gotcha. That happened within like 40 minutes, which is abnormal because that's a longer game.
Sure.
So we decided to play again. So I played till that happened a second time for me.
All right.
Yeah. So Firefly.
That's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. All right, Greg, what about you?
Number four, another Realms game. This time, Fantasy Realms rather than Star Realms. Fantasy Realms is, I think, a delightful game. Again, this is another one similar to Codenames that I've played with my family. It's super quick to teach, super quick to play. You know, you can get through an entire game in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, it's remarkable. But there's also, you know, you have so much fun just exploring the different strategies and trying to put it together. Like, even, you know, if you've played it a whole bunch, say you've been sitting at the table for, you know, 45 minutes, you're on your seventh game or whatever, you can just say to yourself, all right, this is a decent opening hand. I'm going to try to go for this particular game. Because there are identifiable strategies. You know, you've got a weather strategy, you've got an artifact strategy, all these sorts of things that you can identify based on the cards that you see. But because of the sort of, you know, drafting and progressive hand building mechanics can be hard to pull off. So you say to yourself, you know what, we played this whole bunch, I don't necessarily care if I win. I'm going to try to get as close as possible to what I think is the ideal hand and see where that gets you. And so you end up playing sort of games within games, or at least I do. And I think it's so fun, you know, and I think it's genuinely a game that I would bring everywhere. You know, the box is so tiny. I just throw it in a backpack, play it on a train, play it at work, at lunch, play it, you know, anywhere you want. And I think it's fantastic for that, in a way that, you know, a lot of complex games aren't because of their size, and a lot of small games aren't because of their simplicity.
There you go. And my number four is actually Carcassonne.
Oh, yeah.
This is an oldie but a goodie for me. It's one of the games, I think I still probably have the most plays of this than like any other game that I've played. I've played it on the app. I've played it with my former roommate that we actually had.
You had a tally.
A tally of him having, I think, 24 wins to my 18 wins.
Yep.
So we played it a lot, and like I won the Labyrinth board game tournament of this game. Like there was just a lot of stuff, and I still really enjoy it. It has some very simple mechanics in general, but the strategy that's really in there, especially when you're playing a two-player game, is amazing. It's just like you really have to know a lot, and just playing it has always been a lot of fun for me. And yeah, that brought it up to number four on my list.
I've never played it.
Oh my. So many games that we're figuring out.
The list gets bigger and bigger.
That's
what we'll do. We'll actually have a follow-up to this where we play all of the games and report back.
From everyone else's list.
Exactly, yeah.
All right.
Let's move on to number three.
Top three, getting real now.
All right. My number three, Above and Below.
Hey! Oh, that's a familiar game.
Yeah. So there's my Red Raven game.
Mm-hmm.
It was my first Red Raven game.
Yeah.
I love Above and Below. I love the story element. It's like choose your own adventure, the board game.
Yep.
And I love exploring and I love building little towns and collecting the little resources. And it's a real sweet spot for me for time length, you know, as a two-player game. Once you know the rules, it really doesn't take long. So we can play in an evening, a weeknight evening, and it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
And for a lot of the reasons that you both have already mentioned, I really love Above and Below. I love the art. I mean, we talk a lot about how much we like Red Raven Games art, so that's not
true.
A surprise.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, 2.5 votes out of 3 for Above and Below. Yep. I think this is,
cool.
A strong contender.
All right, Greg, what you got?
My number 3 is Mystic Veil. So I mentioned...
Honorable mention for me.
Yeah. You know, it's I think, an amazing game. I mentioned Deck Builders earlier in my number 9 slot. And I think this one is, one, completely unique. You know, it's not a deck builder. It's a card builder. And two, a really good one at that. You know, I think there are certainly some balance issues in the base game, but if you get the expansions, particularly I think Veil of Might or Veil of the Wild, you know, those, a lot of those are solved. And so you open up viable strategies that aren't just flooding your deck with growth. You have alternates to getting tons of points. And I think the fact that the developers are not just introducing new content, but responsive to, you know, okay, playtesting, these are the types of things that we've seen in the game. How are we going to introduce some answers to that? Sort of rotating, you know, as a person who nominally follows esports, I'm constantly thinking about, okay, what is a meta? You know, and so it's not often that you get to see the meta shift in a competitive board game.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's really hard to do. There's no live patching or hot fixes. So, you know, releasing expansions in such a way that can shift really the way people approach the game and think about what types of strategies are successful, I think just speaks to sort of the strength of the design team for AEG and Mystic Veil in particular.
Awesome.
Well, Greg.
Yes, Jacob.
Guess what my number 3 is.
Is it Mystic Veil?
It is Mystic Veil.
Hell yeah! That's what I'm talking about. Vindication right there.
So for almost the same exact reasons that Greg said, it is one of my favorite games just to bring out and play. The card crafting system is amazing. The theme is druids. That's my theme.
druids are Jacob's thing. He's a druid guy.
Like, you know, the theme is right on point for me. And in general, the gameplay of it is amazing. Definitely a great game. And the expansions just make it better.
Yeah.
It just keeps getting better and better. I know that we both gave it a buy it in our review. I think currently, if we re-reviewed it with the expansions included, we would both give this a top shelf game.
There's a pretty good chance, yeah.
So, Mystic Veil, amazing game. Number 3 for me as well.
All right.
Awesome. Top 2.
Top 2.
There we go.
All right, who wants to start?
Let's go with Greg.
Go with me. All right. Yeah. And you can start us off for number 1.
Yep.
Number 2 slot, Terraforming Mars. Leslie mentioned it earlier. I believe her number 5.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Terraforming Mars for me is the ultimate competitive game because I hate competing. which is to say, that's not true. I hate conflict. And I think Terraforming Mars is an amazing game from a perspective of you're competing to be the best at doing a thing. You're trying to build the best engine. You're trying to blitz to the points. And again, you've got different strategies to do that. But there's relatively low player interaction. You can screw someone out of plants. You can beat someone to...
take your plants.
Yeah. You know, you can beat someone to a bonus. But really, for the most part, it's just about putting your head down and saying, all right, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be better at what I do than anyone else. Come at me, or rather don't. and I love that style of gameplay. Not to mention, so space exploration is actually a little bit of a pet theme for me.
Sure.
So Mars, I'm all about it. I think in execution, it's so good. I still need to play Venus Next.
Yep.
Jacob,
me
you
too.
Have it. So we should absolutely get that to table at some point. But I loved, you know, the Hellas and Elysium expansion. I loved having the new milestones and awards and seeing just the little subtle ways in which they affect gameplay. And I think absolutely one of my favorite games of all time, deserving of the number two slot.
All right. Number two for me is a game that has already been mentioned, and that is Fantasy Realms.
Yeah.
I need to play that too.
It is.
We can probably play that before you leave. Hell, yeah. It's like a 5-minute game.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's one of my favorite games in general. A lot of times when I'm introducing my friends to board games now, I will start with this. It's probably my favorite intro-level game that everyone can still enjoy, no matter how many times you've played it.
Yeah, definitely.
There is just a lot going on there. There's very few components. You just have some mechanics that are even similar to games like Rummy and other things like that, because you're collecting sets. But the cards are interesting enough to make that a lot better than the regular card games and that kind of stuff. And I just love the game. Just about for the same reasons that Greg mentioned before, it is a game that whenever I'm going anywhere, it plays all the way up to 8 people for that matter, mm-hmm. which is great.
So yeah. Flexible.
And the 2-player variant is, I think, even better than everything else.
Yeah.
Like, I love the 2-player variant, and then the base game itself is amazing. Altogether, the most probably versatile game that I have in my collection.
One thing that we haven't done yet that I really would love to do, we haven't played the party variant. Where rather than doing the usual sort of drafting, you know, pick one and discard one so that you always maintain a hand of 7, everybody starts with a hand of 7 cards and there are no cards in the middle. Instead, everyone has 15 minutes to trade around. You always maintain
fun.
A 7-card hand, but you can trade 1-for-1, 2-for-2, anything. You can, you know, engineer a 3-way trade. And at the end of 15 minutes, whoever has the best hand is the winner. And I think it would be, again, saying this as someone who doesn't like social deduction games, I think we should try it.
We should play that with a full 8. But yeah, so that's my number 2. Fantasy Realms, definitely one of my favorite games in my collection.
All right.
Awesome. My number 2. Suddenly I'm worried about our number 1s, by the way. We'll come back to that.
I am a little bit as well. But...
my number 2 is Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. I really had this pegged for your number 1.
Yeah. It was for a long time. It really was. It was probably my first truly favorite game, and it had to be in my top list. Mm-hmm. So definitely Sentinels of the Multiverse was the first game I fell in love with. We played it wrong when we first played it, and I still wanted to beat it, and I love the stories that it goes through. A lot of this I said on the podcast where we reviewed it, and I know I was like devastated when I found out you guys hadn't played it. It has a great app with a lot of great animation where the pages flip over and over again, and it calculates all of the different damage and stuff for you, which is really nice.
Yeah.
So it's a great portable option. You can also pass and play with other people. So I love Sentinels. Also lots of powerful female superheroes. It's pretty awesome.
It's pretty legit.
Yeah.
All right. Leslie said it. And now I'm worried about it. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to do this one slightly differently. Jacob, I know I said you can go first tonight. I hate to take that away from you. But I'm going to count down 3, 2, 1. And we're all going to say our number 1 game. And if what I think happens, I think we're going to lose our shit. So, all right, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Pandemic Spirit Legacy Island. Season 1 and 2.
Hey, all right. Jacob saved us. All right. So, Jacob, why don't you go first?
Yep.
Tell us why Pandemic Legacy is your number 1 game.
Pandemic Legacy, I think, has been my number 1 gaming experience in the past years that I've been playing board games that have been like more than just Monopoly and Sorry. We had an amazing time with the game when we did the 16-hour live stream.
Yeah, we did.
Where we played the entire game through. It is still one of the most memorable experiences that I have had in board gaming.
It is the only board game, not counting RPGs.
Yeah.
It's the only board game that I have ever played that has spawned a meme. Spawned an inside joke.
Yeah. And it's one of those games that when I think about it, I'm like, what game have I had the most fun playing? And this one always comes up. Like, I can always tell the story. I can always like look back on it and think like, oh, that was like those trials and tribulations, the betrayal, the sacrifice, those kinds of things. They're like, you know, it's putting stickers on a board and ripping up some cards, but it feels like so much more. It feels like there is so much more of a story in there. And for someone who is not actually a big fan of the base Pandemic game, mm-hmm. Pandemic Legacy just brought it back. And now that we're playing Season 2, it's just reaffirming why I like this game. And yeah. It's just like this whole series for me is like what I like about board games and the way that they can tell really, really fun stories.
I have to admit, I don't like tearing up cards, but I do love opening things.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's one of those things that is just like, it feels so wrong.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, that's how you know that it's permanent. And I just, the entire game for me is just a really great experience. And so it deserved that number one spot for me.
Hey, absolutely respect the mm-hmm. decision. It's an amazing game and an honorable mention from me, even though it didn't appear on the list. All right. Leslie, it's nerd time.
So,
Spirit Island. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. We haven't reviewed this. We probably will eventually. I am curious where it was nowhere on Jacob's list. I thought it would be there somewhere.
Jacob has had unfortunate experiences with Spirit Island.
Oh.
I really enjoy the game.
Yeah.
I will say that. I really enjoy the game. It was, I think, number 11. It actually, like, if you look at my list right now, it technically is on the list. But I last minute changed it to Time Stories
That's
legit, yeah.
So like I love Spirit Island. I think it is an amazing game. I do think that I would like it even more if I had both of the expansions and the promos. Because I actually like the spirits on those more than I like any in the base game.
Gotcha.
And I think that that's what gets me. Is like I like the complexity and the type of spirits that are in the other games more than I like the ones in the base game, and mm-hmm. that's what edged it out off for me.
That's fair.
All right, well, that's enough from the guy who didn't have it as his number one. Yep. You and me.
So we will eventually review this, and I will probably try to tell the story again, so I apologize, but I randomly wandered into the Greater Than Games room at Gen Con last year, and there was some Spirit Island demos, and I was with our friend Scott, and there was a demo, but it was a ticketed demo. So people had purchased the tickets, but they did tell us if nobody showed up that we could play. So we are very much rules followers.
Sure.
And we patiently waited to see if the people who paid for their spot to play this game showed up. And in about 15 minutes after the game was supposed to start, they were not there. One person was there with a ticket, so we sat down to play with her. Two turns into the game, all three of us got up and bought three of the last four copies that they had for sale that day. We fell in love with the theme. I love the fact that it's Settlers Reversed. I'm not a huge fan of Settlers of Catan, so which we can talk about some other day. But I loved the flipped theme of it. I loved the spirit of the island taking control.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the story that you could tell through it. I love that it is actually somehow connected to Sentinels, and I will eventually listen to that podcast and figure out how.
There you go.
And it was amazing to me that every single Greater Than Games staff person that I talked to that day was like, no, this is my favorite game. This is my absolute favorite game.
That's pretty incredible.
And they have a lot of games. So they were all so excited, and we very quickly kept that excitement going. And I have loved teaching this game to new people. It's rare that I...
Like us, for example.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's rare that I get to bring a game to Hunter and teach it to him. So that was a good experience. And we brought the game back from Gen Con, and I think we played it like four times in the week after getting home.
I believe it.
So, and
totally I haven't done that.
I mean,
it's solo.
Yeah.
It's a great mechanics. It's super, super cooperative in the sense that you can't quarterback. I let somebody quarterback a game of Spirit Island once, and we lost epically. I saw it happening, and I sort of just let it go because I felt like someone needed to learn a lesson.
Hey, there you go.
But you have to work together. You have to communicate. There's not one person that's more important than anybody else in this game, and I really like that.
Yeah. I think, for me, Spirit Island checks a lot of boxes. I think, you know, I'm sort of predisposed to enjoying cooperative games because I prefer, like, working to get good at my own thing. And so if I can do that in a cooperative, collaborative environment, I think I enjoy it all the more, you know, sort of working as part of a whole. Thematically, I have always had sort of a fondness for the sort of vengeful spirit archetype, you know, and I've thought about just like rending open the earth and dropping some people into a fissure in the center of the earth. And so that was a plus. And I like that it's got a solo variant. You know, of course, I love playing it with people and I love being part of a whole, but in terms of sort of enabling my obsessions, being able to play a solo game is huge, you know, because I can just sit down and I can play through it and I can play two or three back to back and no one's going to judge me or get bored or any of that. And so that's great. And then, you know, finally, speaking of enabling my obsessions, I think one of the probably the thing that pushed this over the edge for me into becoming one of my favorite games is that I'm very much a person who gets fixated on things. When I find something new, I consume it obsessively, whether it's a show or whether it's a video game or whether it's a board game. And one of the things that I think is particularly difficult with regards to that for board games is that, you know, they take a lot of time to play and there's a lot of time to set up and they're very, they stay in one place. You know, it's hard to access information about them if you don't have the game right in front of you. But Spirit Island solves that by having an incredibly comprehensive wiki and a digital database of all of the cards. So after our first game, I literally was like, oh, this is interesting. I thought about it the whole way home, and then I got home, and I went to the wiki, and I looked up who all the adversaries were, and I looked up who all the spirits were, and I looked up what all the cards do, and I was like, I wonder how many cards cost more than this. I wonder how many cards cost less than this. I wonder what, like, all of these sorts of things, and they made a space for me to do that. And so I just kind of fed and fed and fed on this information and was like, I want to pull this off. Like, there's a 9-cost card that destroys an entire board, and if I never get to play it, I'm going to be super sad. You know, and so all of these little things that just make it really easy for me to fall in love with the game, and that's exactly what I did.
Yeah, I think that's something that Greater Than Games does really well with Sentinels. They have the podcast.
Exactly, yeah.
And there's a Sentinels wiki as well that is not quite as thorough, I don't think, as the Spirit Island, because I think it was started a little late. But I definitely appreciate that part of the story as well. And it makes sense now why you knew the name of every single card when we were playing it the other day.
Yep. Like, that's a thing that I'm predisposed to doing anyway. Like, I started to do that even as we were playing our game of Path and Light and Shadow that we played right before this. I do that with Terraforming Mars just from playing the game. If you give me an online database, I'm going to do that for sure. So, yes, I think I have zero reservations about Spirit Island being my number one slot, and I don't think it will fall from there for the foreseeable future. I say that, I would love to be surprised, but I'm feeling pretty strong about this one.
There we go. And well, there you go, everyone. That is a look at our top 10 games. So let us know what you think. What are your top 10 games? And we just wanted to thank you for staying tuned, for listening to the podcast, and especially for those of you who have been here from the very beginning. Really, really appreciate you staying. Those of you who have just joined, thank you for coming in. We hope to have, you know, more and more episodes, get even more high quality content for you guys. And yeah, we hope that you keep tuning in, keep listening to us, and let us know what you think about the podcast. What are your top 10s? And be sure to join us next week for our next podcast.